Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. The landscape for short films is changing quickly. One might say we're entering a golden age, where content is being taken seriously, and you can even make money off a 5-minute video, if you get the right eyes on it. Traditionally, getting those views used to be all about submitting your project onto the festival circuit. This also came with a stipulation that you couldn't exhibit your project online or anywhere else if you wanted to make it in. That's not the case anymore. It's occurred to me that many of our audience may not know just how valuable a Vimeo staff pick can be to your career. The distinction, which celebrated its 10th anniversary at South by Southwest this year, can lead not only to massive exposure, but gigs from brands, producers, and even music companies. You can really make a name for yourself if you're one of the 3 to 4 projects selected every day by Vimeo. Case in point, my guests on today's show, who have combined for 19 staff picks between them. Daniels of Swiss Army Man fame, and Kirsten Lepore, whose animated shorts in the style of High Stranger led to jobs like creating an episode of Adventure Time, which later went on to win an Emmy. Together, they joined Vimeo's head of curation, Sam Morrill, to discuss how to get a Vimeo staff pick, what the staff pick can do for your career, and how to best position yourself for a successful career after creating a short. Hey guys, it's John, and I am here at the Vimeo, is it the lounge? What do you guys call this place?
This is our sleeping quarters, actually. Yes.
We're in the Vimeo dorm.
Yeah. It's like the Apple compound, but for Vimeo. Just like a big donut, super sci-fi. Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good
mental
image.
For all the viewers out there, just imagine Apple, but with a big V on it.
Yeah. I'm actually going to go ahead and ask you guys to introduce yourselves so that our listeners can acquaintance themselves with your voices. Mm-hmm. So starting with you.
Sure. My name is Sam Morrill. I'm director of curation at Vimeo.
Great intro. My name is Daniel Scheinert, and I don't work for Vimeo, but I have some staff picks on there, most of which I made with
Daniel Kwan. I am the other Daniel. We are directors, I guess.
And I'm Kirsten Lepore, and I'm also a director, usually animation specific.
By herself.
By myself.
Solo.
So then, what have you guys directed, I would say? Let's
start with this side.
All some pretty awesome, huge projects, I think, for a lot of our audience. So maybe
Kirsten's big hits are Move Mountain, Bottle, and High Stranger, super viral hit. She's got a lot of deep cuts.
Yeah,
like,
some of her deep cuts that are our personal favorite, Booty Clap.
Booty
Clap.
Pretty
great, little
money
gem. The guest
Story of North America, is that what it's called?
Story of North America, yeah. That's like her first big hit. I like the Guess Who a lot, just because that was your first staff pick, right?
Yeah, it was.
Guess Who, yeah.
And then you got to search up the Adventure Time stop motion episode.
Of course.
I don't think it's on Vimeo.
No, it is.
Oh!
Secrets.
It's secretly up there. I just uploaded and didn't tell anyone, but yeah, the whole Adventure Time episode is up on Vimeo.
So someone notices.
That. Yeah.
So that's now. Kirsten.
Yeah.
Cool.
What have we made, Kirsten?
Thanks, guys. Okay, so you guys made, biggest thing in recent history would be the feature film Swiss Army Man, one of my personal favorites. It really, seriously,
it's kind
and
of
not
about
just,
her.
And not just because I know you guys and I'm married to one of you guys. I think I would objectively still love this movie so much. It still would be one of my favorite movies of, what year did it come out? 2016,
it's 17? It's a feature film that's mostly about how Kirsten made Dan Kwan less scared of his poop.
I'm still working on it. There's still progress to be made. And then you guys also, some of your other deep cuts on Vimeo would be Dog Boarding, would be Turned Down for What? That's one of your biggest music videos, I would say. DJ Snake, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Starring Daniel Kwan, so just imagine that guy.
Yeah, he's
talking.
In that. Interesting Ball. What else am I missing? There's so many. There's just too many.
Yeah. No, you passed the test.
That was
a good score.
I think Scheinert added up the staff picks we got, and it was 14?
I counted 14 between our three accounts, but then they said 13 earlier today.
Yeah,
I might have been wrong.
How many accounts do you guys have?
Well, it was Dan Kwan, Daniel Scheinert, and then Daniels.
They're cheating. They're cheating.
We're definitely cheating. Because
He has these two year-end videos that are pseudo behind the scenes that both got featured.
Yeah, thanks for that.
I just have 5. Whatever.
Animation takes a long time. It's fine.
That is true. I've definitely probably done way less films.
She has a better ratio,
right?
I don't know.
Of short films.
Wait, there's so many more films I'm not mentioning. What am I leaving out?
Okay.
I mean, that's what, 19 films between you guys that have gotten a staff pick,
yeah.
I guess? So, you know, let's talk about
maybe how you got those distinctions. Like, what do you think it is about your work? Obviously, it's all very original.
Oh, yes. Yeah, why'd you give us that? And why didn't you pick some of the other ones, goddammit?
That's a good question. I don't know if I can take credit for the early staff picks. I think that credit would go to Blake Whitman and maybe Dallas Verdugo. So shout-outs to the founders of the Staff Pick channel.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Our very first short film we ever made was less of a short film and more of a visual effects test called Swingers, based on the movie by I forget who.
Favreau.
No, Favreau stars in it. Didn't make it.
I think
Doug Lyman made it.
Oh, really?
But anyway,
oh, yeah, right, Doug
I've
Lyman,
never
yeah.
seen it. I watched the first 20 minutes. It sucks. But we made a movie.
Oh, give it a chance.
It's
okay.
Garbage. It's just a bunch of bros running to Vegas, moping about a breakup. Yeah. I couldn't finish it.
I'm a fan.
Hot takes already.
It's Andy's favorite movie, my friend. But anyway.
Oh my God. I gotta finish it. I've never finished it. But so we decided to make an ode to a movie we'd never seen, and for some reason they staff picked it, and we decided to become a directing duo.
I think one of the weird, like, maybe it's like a subconscious thing that happened. We just, at least for me personally, I like ate, drank, and slept in Vimeo. Like when I was like not in class, I would just watch Vimeo videos. I remember the first time I watched a Vimeo staff pick, I was like, holy crap, this is just made by a dude like on his own in his house. And so I just ended up watching everything you guys staff picked, and my, like, this was still in college, and then it was like my goal to become a staff pick alum or whatever. And so I think just naturally, just by watching all this stuff and just like wanting to be a part of that crowd and just achieve this things that they were achieving, like eventually we were able to do it. Though honestly, it was kind of an accident. Like the first one was not like, it was not one of those things where like, I'm gonna make a masterpiece.
That was like a warm up to one day we'll make something staff pickable.
Exactly,
and then
yeah.
And like went ahead and picked that. And we're like, I guess we can quit trying.
And that same thing's for you, Kirsten, too. The first thing that you got staff picked was just kind of an accident, right?
Yeah, I didn't even know what a staff pick was actually. So I wasn't even striving for it at that point. I wasn't striving for it until I got it. And then, then I became addicted to it. And I was like, now I have to get more staff picks.
It is like a drug, for sure. Yeah.
Now, were any of your early staff picks part of the Vimeo HD channel? Is that possible? Because remember the Vimeo HD channel, mm-hmm. which kind of ran parallel to Vimeo staff picks.
Oh.
And then we eventually sunset that because HD became the industry standard. So it was no longer special to have a video in HD.
You're right. I remember that. But I don't know where our videos stood.
Yeah, probably not the HD channel. That was like mostly like time lapses and like slow mo tests. And
honestly,
like that.
None of our stuff looked good in HD, so it was definitely not that.
I love that. Like not even that long ago. Like that doesn't feel like that long ago. That was like 10 years ago, where HD wasn't the standard. Like everyone was still making SD stuff. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Totally.
So
the 5D Mark II, I think, was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's the reason. Like we were doing a camera test with the 5D Mark II, because I just bought it, I think my junior year or my senior year. I had just won you know those online commercial contests? Yeah. I don't know if they still are, they're so popular, but me and Shiner, we would do them all the time in college. That was like our summer jobs. Yeah.
Yeah, I would
Kirsten
too.
Did them too. Yeah. And so I bought the camera and I was like, let's go do a camera test because I just got this camera. And that was Swingers. That was the first staff pick. So all these things kind of coalesced and just, like we said in our talk earlier today, just like it was just a really good accident that it happened, and then from then we were able to like retroactively decide how we got there.
But Sam was going to tell us what makes a staff pick, or
why'd you pick our? What are the rules?
Well, there aren't any rules, so to speak. It's kind of free form, but I mean, should we maybe give the audience kind of a background on staff picks and what it is for those who aren't familiar?
Sure, I think that a lot of our audience are familiar, but give us your
because it's
your
kind
pitch.
Of a big deal. But
ooh, do you want me to pitch your staff picks?
Well, so I mean, it was founded 10 years ago, so that's what we're here at South By for right now, is to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of staff picks. So to date, over 12,000 videos have been added to the staff picks channel. And they've been viewed collectively, I think, over 2 billion times.
Holy crap.
So on average, we feature somewhere between 3 and 4 staff picks a day, and they vary in terms of genres. So we're featuring anything from comedy to drama to action sports to travel videos to something we call eye candy, which is kind of a nebulous term for anything that's visually inspiring, and we do music videos. And so I think with Daniel's, at least, like your earliest staff picks were mostly music videos, right? Or they were maybe unofficial music videos in the case of Dog Boarding, for example. Yeah. So that was done with a Foster the People track, but that was not the official music video, was it?
Well, now that it's been long enough, it was kind of like officially sanctioned by Columbia Records.
Yeah.
That was originally supposed to be a viral short for Coke Burn, the energy drink, and they shelved it because they're like, "What the fuck is this?"
They're like, "Can you take out all the shots where they step on the dogs?" Like, that's the thing, guys.
That's the meat of it.
Why'd you pay for this?
And so it sat on the shelves for 3-4 months, which honestly isn't that long, but like still we're like, "Oh fuck, that's never going to see the light of day." And then Saul Levitz over at Columbia Records, who's one of the commissioners, saw it and was like, "That's dope. How much did it cost? Oh, that's nothing. Let's just buy it and just put a Foster the People track on it and just put it out on the internet. And it'll be like a sort of just like a little viral video that puts the music out there." And yeah.
So we had to throw away the original music.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for the first staff pick of yours, Kirsten, that I remember would be Bottle, I think. And
I think it was Guess Who.
Well, Guess Who that I remember. That
From your era,
Vimeo,
your era.
Because I started in 2009 and Guess Who was, I think, in 2008 maybe.
Yeah.
But so Bottle, was that your graduation project?
That was my first year short for CalArts in grad school. Yeah, so that was like the first year project. But I actually think Bottle isn't staff picked. I think it has a, I know, I'm like, this is controversial. Whoa. I actually think it's, because I recently went back and tried to look at them.
That's
impossible. No, it's not staff picked, but it got chosen by, but it was like part of the Vimeo Festival thing. So.
It was, well, not, it wasn't just part of it. It won the Vimeo
Festival. Like, so it has that badge. It has like that community winner badge, which is like a really specific, which almost feels even cooler, but I'm pretty sure.
I don't believe that we didn't
feature. Hold on, we're checking right now on our iPhone.
I'm pretty sure it's not staff picked.
I'm guessing that you accidentally removed it from the channel, as people sometimes do.
No!
That happens.
That's a thing?
Oh, yeah, totally.
You guys allow us that
Kirsten
control?
Lepore, 1.7 million views. No staff pick badge.
Would it be possible for me to...
You might not be able to see it on the mobile version of the site.
Okay. So, we can find this out later.
Okay.
Not trying to put you off.
Fair,
I just want to...
We'll look into that after this podcast.
It's okay. I have plenty of other ones.
We agreed to the podcast so that we could... grill you.
Can challenge you,
Dan and I
just
made
a, trap, actually.
A movie called Interesting Ball. Everybody thought it was real good. Yeah. There's no staff pick on it.
That one got staff picked.
I don't remember.
No, that one got staff picked, yeah.
Sorry.
So then, what would you guys say that that staff pick then did for your careers after it happened? Or, I mean, your first staff pick since you have, like...
I think for Dan and I, the biggest thing it did was a morale boost. Like, we literally, like, we're just friends who made something, and this, like, stamp of approval and subsequent, like, comments and exposure made us keep making stuff, you know? And yes, other people saw it, and maybe it got us work, but, like, that was the biggest thing.
Yeah, we probably would not be working together if Vimeo hadn't just said, "Hey, this was good," because that was just a test, and we would just like do things here and there for fun together, but never like it was never like a decision, let's make things together as a directing duo, until we started getting like consistently getting attention on Vimeo, and that was mostly what the staff picks did for us early on, and then once we hit a certain point, then it was really just like all these record labels were seeing it, a lot of these. Actually, in London, a lot of these ad agencies are seeing our stuff. I think for some reason in London, our work really resonated over there, and a lot of them saw it because of Vimeo, and that was where we did most of our first commercials, was just because people from London were like, "This is dope. Let's fly these guys out there."
Most importantly, it got the attention of other filmmakers. We always like joked that like Vimeo, 10,000 views on Vimeo is worth like a million on YouTube. You know, as far as like. What
their
come
real
out
views,
of it, or
right,
who
yeah.
you'll
yeah.
meet,
yeah.
or
the quality of the views.
So, like, through that community, we met animators in London that we loved, and filmmakers David Wilson and Julia Pott and Mikey Please, who introduced us to Kirsten Lepore, who Dan married. So, thanks, Vimeo. Yeah.
And I also have a really concrete kind of success story from a staff pick, which was like very easy to trace, which was that I got a staff pick on my CalArts thesis film, which is a film called Move Mountain. And as soon as I released it online, I actually had like kept it offline for a long time and then was trying to submit it to festivals and it wasn't really like doing much on the festival circuit, wasn't doing that well. And so finally I was like, oh, I'll just put it up online. And so I made it public on Vimeo. And then like the next day, I think it was like Jason Sandi that like got back in touch and was like, oh, hey, we didn't know you were releasing this, but like we would love to staff pick it and feature it. And then they gave it a staff pick and I was so excited. And then literally a week later, I got an email from the Adventure Time showrunner. That's how I got that project. Because he literally was like, I just saw your film on Vimeo staff picks like a week ago. And this feels like really like it could go so well, like work so well in the Adventure Time universe. We've been wanting to do a stop motion episode. Like, let's do this, basically.
Damn, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was a really crazy story. I was just like, holy crap, I'm not going to, like, keep my film private, like anymore in the future. Like, yeah. I will absolutely put something up online, like, as soon as I finish it now.
Well, that's something that, like, I think we should definitely talk about is when do you put a short up online versus when does it have the distinction of being like, oh, we got to wait. We got to wait for festivals to come or, like, get back to us about whether it's going to premiere there or not. Because I know that a lot of festivals need that sort of premiere distinction to exhibit your work, which is kind of...
Honestly, I think Kirsten could talk to this better than we could, just because we're not really part of the festival crowd. Like, we were very much just, like, internet, just... Our ethos is, like, make it, put it on the internet, make another thing. And so,
Kirsten... I do have an opinion, but I'll go after Kirsten.
Yeah, exactly. Let Kirsten talk first.
Okay.
Kirsten?
I just feel like in my experience, yeah, I've done, like, a bit of the festival circuit thing. You know, and there have definitely been some benefits that have come to that, but or come from that, but... like the benefits of putting my films online have always outweighed, you know, the benefits of the film festival. And I feel like even if we should just look at like the numbers game, it's sort of like maybe a couple thousand people at most are going to see your film at a festival. And those are people that are paying money to be at the festival. So it's like a really specific crowd and a specific type of person. And it's like a festival goer person, not necessarily like, you know, a client or someone that might like hire you for work in the future. And then, yeah, when you put yourself online, like you have the potential for millions and millions, you have the potential for billions of people to see your work, like depending on how popular it is.
This is Gangnam Style.
Well, that's kind of, yeah, that's basically Gangnam Style. But yeah, you have that potential. It is there. It's, you know, it's a possibility and you could never, you know, you can never have that with just festivals. But I also kind of feel like, from the research I've done, and I was actually just talking to Max Porter from Tiny Inventions about this. It's part of another animation collective. They just got nominated for an Oscar for their film Negative Space. So like they have a lot of experience in festival circuits, and I feel like he kind of corroborated this story that like there really aren't that many festivals these days now that are gonna like not show your film just because it's online. Like there are so few. I mean, I feel like one of them is the Academy Awards or whatever, but I don't know.
Nominate you if it's online?
Well, not before you've had like a publicly like a public paid screening or so, or won an award at a qualifying festival. So it's still like a specific, you can put it on after that, but they have really specific rules. And then I've only encountered one other festival, which is like a children's film festival in Spain that told me I couldn't show my film because it was online. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, whatever.
Sometimes Sundance is kind of picky about it.
But they've still shown a lot of, like David O'Reilly's films are always online and they always show his work, I feel like. Yeah, and a lot of other friends as well. Yeah, they're changing. Yeah.
They were actually one of the first major film festivals to loosen up on that requirement. And as a result, a lot of other festivals followed suit because Sundance kind of cleared the way for everyone else to kind of ease up on that restriction and say, okay, if you're already online, that doesn't necessarily negate your ability to submit.
I feel like South by kind of helped with that too, because like they've been showcasing music videos for so long, which are never exclusives. Right. And then like there was still people coming to watch those and loving them and being exposed to them. And it was kind of like, what's the deal with the premiere thing? Like,
Well, Notes on Biology, Danny Madden's film,
totally,
which won South by, I don't know if it was 2012 or 2011, it won the Shorts Prize here. That was already on Vimeo and had been staff picked and had kind of had a viral moment on Vimeo before it then went to South by and won the award. And that was, I think, one of the earliest instances that I can think of a short that was already online going on to win a big jury prize at a major film festival. And actually, funny story about that is I remember that film came onto the Vimeo staff's radar because you guys had commented on it, because I guess you guys went to Emerson.
Yeah, with Danny's a friend of ours.
And we had never heard of Ornana Films prior to that, and we noticed that you guys had liked it on Vimeo, and we watched it.
Funny. Oh, yeah. I gotta go brag about this to Danny. You're welcome for everything, Danny.
And actually, another funny story, Danny was like on a camping trip in the woods when it all happened.
Oh, shoot.
So he was like, he didn't have internet or anything.
That sounds like Danny.
That's very Danny.
He came back from this camping trip, and his film had gotten a staff pick, had gone viral, and he had totally missed it, you know, it was like for 3 days.
But yeah, Danny Mann's not the kind of person who's going to care about missing
that.
He's like,
all
right, cool, whatever, I'm going to work on my next one.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I got to go back into the woods before this goes to my head. I'm going to be a hermit for 2 years, and he just got texting.
And just to add something as well, I feel like on the sort of viral tip, I feel like there's also some films that like really do so much better on the internet than they do at a film festival. Like I feel like High Stranger, it premiered at South by Southwest last year, and it had like a good reception at the screening. Like it was fine, but like, I don't know, it didn't make a huge splash or anything. And it really wasn't until I released it online that it just like totally blew up. Like
actually the crazy thing is, you released it online with the rest of the films.
It was already online.
And it got buried because it was with a bunch of films.
It was a 45-minute
Exactly. So no one watched it. And then you released it on its own like a few weeks later, mm-hmm. and it exploded. Yeah. It was really fun to watch.
But yeah, some films are more for the internet.
Yeah, I feel like it's nice that the rules are getting relaxed at film festivals. And I feel like now it's more about the filmmaker trying to figure out like what's best for your movie. I feel like in most cases, I'm like an internet fan. And then there's certain like dramas or art films or experiments that like festivals can make a huge difference in a filmmaker's life by like giving that stamp of approval or putting it in a theater. Like there's certain things that like are not very fun at home in your bedroom on a laptop, but like, you know, it gets curated by a festival and suddenly you're like, whoa, like I gave this the attention it deserved, you know, like.
Well, it's interesting that you say experimental films are like sort of a part of that wave that can do better in festivals, because mm-hmm. I feel like you all have pretty experimental films.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying real experimental. I definitely do think of my
real
stuff
abstract.
As experimental, but like I think we always try to combine like populism and experiments.
Right,
and
which does
some people
really
don't.
Well on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas like there are people who are like true experimental filmmakers who like don't care about the audience, and that stuff like doesn't work on the internet because you're just your attention's just pulled in so many different directions. And a film, like I was just thinking about, this isn't a short, but we watched A Ghost Story in theaters.
Oh, so good.
And it blew my mind away watching it in theaters because I was forced to sit there and watch it, and it's such a patient film. And if I had seen that on like Netflix or something, I probably wouldn't have the same effect. And so there are certain films that just like that are just better suited for the theater experience.
Like at South by a few years ago, we saw Sequin Rays, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Which became the show.
Sarah Gertrude Shapiro.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that became the show Unreal. But it was like such a theatrical friendly experience. It's like an incredible short film with incredible performances, and it's not like a viral video. I don't know if
it's on Vimeo. Yeah,
it is now.
Yeah, it's on Vimeo as a staff pick, but it was released years after.
But that was one where I was like it worked in a theater, you know.
For
and
sure.
I was like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's also the difference of watching something like that with an audience. I mean, it's a very
totally.
Funny film.
Yeah. The audience thing is a huge thing, and that's something that we started working towards more recently in some of our work. A lot of our stuff was just meant to be for the internet, but more recently, like trying to find things that can be shown with an audience, because that's the stuff that like got us into filmmaking in the first place. Is just like trying to aspire towards that sort of like confusing viewing experience where the person next to you can be laughing and the person like behind you can be like crying and the person in front of you can be walking out of the theater. Like that's kind of what we wanted to do, and you don't really get that full experience in the internet because it's so insular. You just watch it by yourself and you can stop at 2 minutes in if you're not into it. Yeah,
and only sometimes read the comments, which
right
is
exactly
the community. But
right, yeah.
I think while we're throwing festivals under the bus and saying Vimeo is the way to go, the counter argument what's valuable about festivals now and will always be valuable is like that they bring people together. So like I'm glad that they're not exclusive and still, you know, putting that stamp of approval on people and flying people out to whatever city, and like the lasting friendships and collaborators we've met at festivals is what we got out of it, not like gigs,
right?
You know,
yeah,
or,
totally true,
you know,
yeah.
Like it's not your exposure is like, you know, 100 people, but like the real exposure is like your future wife.
Yeah.
Or future husband.
No, yeah, y'all didn't meet at a festival.
Or yeah, or just future collaborators too.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what's fantastic about being here.
Well then, so people, you know, make shorts kind of with an intent to get to festivals. You know, there's like people say you can't go over 20 minutes. There are certain things that
obviously attract festivals more in terms of like dealing with social issues. When you're on the internet, are there any like rules for making a short that will go viral in a way?
Yeah, short? I mean, make it short. Like the barrier's even lower. You know, like if you're over 2 minutes, it better be good.
Yeah,
you know.
Shit.
The average staff pick is actually 7 minutes long, which is interesting.
Well, Vimeo is different than the rest of the internet. That's why you guys are special, because YouTube's average viral video is probably like a minute and a half. So
right, totally.
Yeah, 7 minutes is like pretty intense. Yeah. But that's what the Vimeo crowd is looking for. It's like something very special and something that's going to be worth that time.
But that puts us somewhere like in between like Vine and your average festival short. Because here at South By, I'm guessing that the average short in like the narrative competition is probably 12 to 15 minutes, something like that.
Hmm. Yeah.
So 7 minutes would be on the shorter side for South By or Sundance.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Does Vimeo ever like not include shorts that are over like 10 minutes for reasons, or is it?
We don't have it. No, that's just the average length. But I think that the longer the short, the higher the standard that we're holding it to.
I see.
What is the longest staff pick actually? Do you have that in mind? Like the number at least?
Off the top of my head, I don't know, but I know that we've featured a couple feature films.
Okay,
This guy, Dean Peterson, who's a filmmaker out of Brooklyn, he made a feature film a few years ago that we featured as a staff pick.
Okay,
I'm blanking
cool.
on the name,
mm-hmm.
But people can just look it up, Dean Peterson.
Yeah.
But so there have been a couple features on staff picks.
Right. Florida Man was staff pick. That's like 50, 60 minutes.
Something like that,
Cam Girls, too.
Oh, Cam Girls. Right. That wasn't staff pick, though, right?
I don't think it was staff pick, but that's on Vimeo On Demand, and that's a full-length feature film.
Sexy stuff.
So then for those longer shorts, you say like a certain type of quality is looked for. What is that type of quality? Like, what should filmmakers be aware of when they're making their films in terms of, I guess, production values?
Sure. I mean, with longer shorts, it's less going to be a matter of like form or technique and more just nuts and bolts storytelling. So like in order to hold someone's attention, you know, if they're going to make it the full 20 minutes, it's not going to be because the image quality was so amazing or anything. It's going to be because you were telling an interesting story.
Cool.
But that said, I mean, people watch staff picks for different reasons. I mean, a lot of staff picks excel on like a craft standpoint and are really just style over substance, so to speak. But then other staff picks are just, you know, really bare bones production, but have a really funny point of view. So like the example I often give is Celia Rousen Hall's short, The Audition, which is super basic. It's just a single take, you know, probably like a mini DV camera, a DSLR set up on a tripod, and it's just her, and she's hilarious, and it's a really compelling video. But from like a style standpoint, it's, you know, deliberately so. It's very, very basic.
Mm-hmm. So then, you know, short form is becoming increasingly popular just in the fact that there's so many different ways to like exhibit your short form content now. You know, there's episodic, there's music videos, there's viral videos, there's shorts for festivals. Where do you guys see the future of short form content going?
The future. I think as far as you mean as like a collective of creative like video or just like as far as like a viable career or like
yeah,
what are you thinking?
I think like if a filmmaker were to have like an idea for a short form piece,
mm-hmm.
what is the best outlet for him to like make her.
Yeah, hey, sorry, that's why she's here.
What do you think the most attractive form of a short form content video is in terms of, I don't know.
I do think that like there's the possibility that we're entering a golden age of short film stuff, like you say, where like people like care a lot about content right now. Like there's all these dueling websites that want attention, and instead of making ads, they're buying shorts and being like, no, come to topic.com, we're buying shorts, or like Vice or whatever, and like. And so just the nice thing is like the job of the filmmaker is to tell really good stories, like just tell the best story you can, and that finally it's actually kind of viable. You don't have to like think of shorts as a stepping stone towards one day getting a gig on TV. You could, and the same with music videos, like music videos used to be like sexy band footage, but now there's I don't know, there's a market for like, no, you tell a story, like tell an awesome story, and that'll get people to listen to our music. But I can't speak to that because we don't make money that way.
Yeah, I mean,
so maybe
I'm
making that up.
No, but no, it's true. I think that's almost like an ideal. Like,
right.
It's like a place where suddenly the way that the landscape works, the media landscape works, is these big brands are paying you money to do whatever you want with it, which is insane, as long as they can put your name on it, and that's like, you know, like you said, Dazed actually paid for Interesting Ball, which was cool. That was like a small little
in Pockets.
Oh, and actually, yeah, right, yeah, yeah. Random Acts. That was BBC Random Acts Channel 4. But so like that kind of stuff, like Absolut Vodka makes short films with people and all these other brands.
And I'm about to do one with Belvedere Vodka.
Right, exactly.
So yeah, where they're just financing a short film.
That's exactly. Awesome.
Yeah.
So it's a weird
big vodka company. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing where like that's actually now possible, because you know, for a really long time, short films were just kind of like, why did you do that except for exposure? Now you can say, I did it because I got paid to do it and I can actually make a living off of it, and that's awesome.
Yeah, but I made 50 bucks.
We made 50. Yeah, Interesting Ball was not a good example. We did not make that. Was a tiny budget, but in order to even get to that place, you do have to still just go the old-fashioned way of just making something and putting it online and hoping people see it, and then deciding where you want to put it so people can see it is just kind of up to you and up to the context of what your short film is. And for us, and for a lot of our friends, like Vimeo is still just the place where there's a very specific audience, and there's a very specific type of person, and a lot of producers and executives who have a little bit of power, they go to Vimeo to check that out and see like what are the young people making these days. And I think that's like, you know, Belvedere Vodka. Actually, it wasn't Belvedere Vodka. It was Janelle Monáe who picked you, right, Kirsten?
That's probably true. But yeah. I mean, Belvedere had to agree.
The
client had to.
But yeah. How did Janelle see your work? I don't know.
On Vimeo.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So just starting out, it still seems like just getting your stuff out there is like goal number one. And then from there, hopefully it does well and you have options to be like, should I continue doing these short films and trying to just do it on my own? Cause that's also an option. You can do that. Should I, sell out a little bit, but at least get like a bigger budget. I can learn a little bit more, have a bigger crew, try things that I would never be able to do on my own. And go work with Belvedere or Taco Bell or whatever. Not that Taco Bell's doing original shorts.
Yes.
Not yet. They should. They probably should. But
Liv Moss, guys.
What's up?
So I just said Liv Moss.
Liv Moss. There you go.
Chalupas.
Exactly.
Brought to you by.
But So the fun thing is, before short films were a stepping stone to like TV and film, feature films, whereas for like Kirsten doesn't even want to do feature films really, right?
Nah, yeah. I love shorts. Yeah. Shorts are I'm like the only, maybe one of the only short filmmakers that actually just wants to do shorts for the rest of my life, which is not a big money making thing at all. But yeah.
It's changing.
Yeah, it seems like it's changing.
It's changing, yes. I mean, I've never gotten like the opportunity like this Belvedere opportunity before. Like that branded content kind of model is cool. I mean, you don't have to put Belvedere in it at all. Like you don't have to, it's just like paid for by Belvedere Vodka. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, besides that, commercials, music videos, you know, that's kind of like the standard venues for it, or mm-hmm. ways to make money from it.
Quan and I are we've always been quantity over strategy, though. Like, we've always just been like making something, and as soon as we're done, we start making the next thing, and then we're not really thinking about how we're putting out that thing or where we're putting. We just try to like, oh yeah, it's everywhere. Put it in on a.
That's great.
And
I do think we're lucky though, because I think if our work wasn't doing well on the internet, we would probably take a step back and be like, okay, what do we need to do? What should we change? How do we strategize? But we've been really lucky where like we've just been for the past, you know, 6-7 years, just maybe 8 years now, actually, we just put it online and like enough of them work that we don't have to think about the strategy. We just keep just like, okay, let's do another one, let's put it out there and do another one, and some of them are misses, but like we learn from it, and we just kind of keep pushing forward.
But we did kind of escape shorts, unlike Kirsten.
Right. Yeah,
we kind of like
Well, that was always the goal, though. That
yeah.
was always the
yeah.
goal.
We always
was always
to do features.
Yeah, we always wanted to move up and to just like try. Part of it is because it was always the goal, but then also like I think at a certain point, like there was something really fun about the challenge of like, okay, we somehow at least somewhat figured out this short form content thing, and we've made it work, and it's very exciting. But this new challenge is like, that's what I want to tackle now. This is the new monster, and hopefully one day when we tackle the feature monster, we'll move on to, I don't know, children's books or plays or something. I don't know.
Video games
for sure.
Robots.
Yeah.
We're gonna make robots.
Yeah. I could totally see us actually having to strategize a little bit more if we weren't so lucky. It really is just like this weird luck thing where we were in the right place at the right time, just making the right stuff that was like that people were reacting to in a way that like obviously before we started working together. I mean, he had some viral stuff before we worked together, but for me, I was not making anything viral. I was just screwing around making weird things. So it for me, it was like a pretty big leap to have our stuff just suddenly work.
You guys seem like you're not really precious with your work in terms of like once it's done, it's done. And how long would you say you work on an average project? Like, are you, once you get into post-production, are you like, okay, like let's get this done as quickly as we can and get it out there? Or is it like, oh, we really need to like make this diamond, you know, like out of the rough?
I'll give you a little insight into their working dynamic. Daniel Kwan is the precious one, and Daniel Scheinert is like, just get it, just it's done, just put it out there.
More or less.
I couldn't tell from the podcast that
but
we're
Dan,
just doing right now.
Dan and I both like benefit from a deadline, so then it kind of forces us into that rushing thing, but then we're learning to appreciate like trying to inject some distance, you know, like a break midway through a project or before we full on lock it, like leave it alone for 4 days, which we didn't do as when we were younger.
What are the advantages of that break?
It's great.
Yeah.
I feel like
even one day is great. Yeah.
The advantage is like you come back with fresh eyes and sometimes you realize like you were being overly neurotic about something that doesn't matter, or you realize like you had been ignoring the real elephant in the room problem with the short. We learned that mostly on Swiss Army Man because we didn't have that and we wished we'd had it. I wonder where we actually had it. Interesting while we had it. We like left it alone for like 3 months.
Yeah, that was a really long post process because we shot it without knowing how it was going to cut together. Like we didn't actually have a script. We had 5 separate scripts that had nothing to do with each other. And then we had to edit it together in a way that felt almost like a documentary editing process where we're like, okay, what do we have? How do we construct this into something that makes sense?
It was also documentary-esque because we had no money to edit it.
Yeah.
That's the other reason it took forever.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but even on Interesting Ball, I remember Swiss Army Man, there was one note session that we got that was particularly rough, and we all just kind of felt really disheartened, and we just took the day off, and was like, let's go watch Steve Jobs. We went to the theater, and we just watched Steve Jobs, and it was just kind of like this really nice break to just not think about the problem so intensely, so that when we got back the next Monday, we were able to just dive in, be a little bit more optimistic. I think that's a big thing. It's like not even like a creative thing. It's more just like a optimism thing. Like how much you actually believe the movies can be fixed. After a certain point, you're just like, fuck it, this is impossible. It's never going to be good. And just like stepping away for a day, you can actually regain that optimism. At least I think for us, I don't know about you. Your projects take forever, so maybe you can talk a little bit more.
Yeah,
about
I'm like
that.
The opposite. I'm super precious about everything that I put out because I put something out like once every 2 years, probably.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, just because it takes so long. But I don't know.
And we never see what she's working on. Like,
yeah, not really. I'm kind of hidden away.
I literally knew nothing about High Stranger, and it was being filmed in the door behind us.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we share like a wall between our offices, basically.
Yeah. Dan and Kirsten have that in common. They're both precious perfectionists.
I knew a lot about High Stranger before it came out, though. That was really fun. But
I'm the one that's not.
Shiner didn't know anything.
That's not sleeping in the same bed.
Yeah. Right.
So then, Kirsten, you said something earlier about how you know you never want to make a feature. Mm-hmm. What is it about short form that you love?
I really love that I feel like every choice I've made in my life, from what I'm going to order at a restaurant to the type of work I'm going to make, is about sampler platters.
Yeah.
Like, even since I was a kid, like, I literally would order the sampler platter appetizer because I just wanted to taste a little bit of everything. Like, I don't need to eat the whole entree. I just want to taste everything in life. And that's kind of how I feel about shorts. Like, I feel like doing shorts just allows you to work for a shorter amount of time on something, finish it, and then, like, inevitably, yeah, that's all I needed to do. I just needed to taste that, to, like, experiment with it, whatever, and then put it out there, and then, like, on to the next thing. Like, I'm ready to try something completely different, or at least, like, in my head, completely different, or something new to experiment with. Being able to be a freelancer, that's, like, also a big part of it, like, allows me to do that, where I'm just moving from project to project. Things are constantly changing, and it just feels nice and fresh, and, like, I don't get too burnt out in any one thing. Mm.
Nice. How about you guys? Do you appreciate shorts over your narrative?
Kind of for the same thing. It's really fun to, like, work for 2 months and then be like, there's something, and move on to the next, you know? And for No Film School listeners, our film school, we went to film school, but then our best film school was shorts. We, like, wrote music videos and commercials and shorts that were, like, 90% inspired by what we wanted to learn next, or something that interested us, and became better filmmakers just with each one, you know? And I think if we'd been precious right out of college and been like, you know, let's just start writing our feature, we would have written a really terrible feature and hopefully never gotten to make it, or then made it and be like done with our careers, you know?
I would still want to see it.
But like, our favorite thing about shorts was we'd learn so much and get to learn something new 3 times a year, you know?
Yeah, right. That's great.
It's all about scratching in a weird creative itch that, like, now that we're doing features, is actually really, it's really hard, because whenever I have this creative idea that I want to just, like, try out or want to experiment with, normally, like, back when we were doing music videos, we're like, oh, let's put in the next music video, or let's put in the next short film. Now I out of fear of, like, cannibalizing our ideas that we want to put in our features, we actually have to patiently, like, sit on it for a while and just be like, okay, maybe this will be something we play with in our next feature, but we can't just, like, immediately just do it and put it out there, which is, you know,
dangerous.
Yeah,
we better dick around a little before our next feature, or else it'll be bad.
Exactly. Yeah. So if Taco Bell wants a custom short film from the Daniels,
about what? Do you have, like, a new idea?
I don't know.
Bring that chihuahua to do back.
Exactly. There we go. Bring that singing, that talking chihuahua back. Shiner used to be obsessed with Beverly Hills Chihuahua, so I think
I've never seen the movie, but the trailer for the first Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Have you seen any movies?
Yeah, that's the trend here. Shiner doesn't watch movies. He just like the ideas
a couple
of them.
But the trailer for Beverly Hills 1201, like, is a missed opportunity, because the movie's not a musical, but the trailer is.
Okay.
It's just singing chihuahuas in an Aztec temple. It's incredible.
Well, great, guys. I mean, I should probably wrap up here so you can keep on with South By. But I will ask one final question, and that's if you had any pearl of wisdom to give to our listeners based off your experience. What would it be?
Pearls.
We just gave our pearls in the talks, but we should reiterate our pearls.
Yeah, you reiterate your pearls.
Let me think about. I feel like there's a couple of ones.
Should I say do a different one than you guys just did in the talk?
Would that be easier? I only have 3 pearls of wisdom total.
Oh, no.
That's
where it stops.
That's it.
Your necklace is 3 pearls.
That's it.
Yeah.
Here comes one of mine.
Okay, you do it. You do it first, and I'm gonna piggyback.
There's some quote from someone that I don't remember where they said something along the lines of, like, don't just watch movies if you're a filmmaker, you know, that then you're just going to make movies about other movies. Mm. I think it's a fun one to say out loud, because it's something I have to remind myself of too. Like, I love movies and I can talk about them for days, and but it's so dangerous, because I'll just end up, you know, making John Wick, who cares?
Yeah.
I love a nice, I like just being controversial. No, but like, I would end up, I could have made John Wick. I love action movies, but like, it's kind of empty.
I completely agree with you. And just to add to that, I feel like I have been historically the opposite person, where I didn't, this is gonna be real controversial, guys. You know this, I didn't really used to like movies. Like I only started liking movie, like feature films I'm talking about. I only really started to like movies within, like, probably since I started dating you, Dan Kwan, because you got me, like, you showed me some cool, interesting indie movies or whatever.
Yeah, but you don't like any of my favorite movies, so it's a bummer.
They're good.
Yeah, exactly, just good.
I mean, I'm still not a cinephile by any standard, by any means. And I think that's
actually... Which makes you a real interesting filmmaker.
Yeah, I think that's made me a better filmmaker, for sure. Yeah, because I feel like most of my inspiration, it's almost good that I don't know that much about, I don't know, like, I'll make a lot of weird mistakes that I probably would have known better if I'd watched movies all the time, but it's like, I'm just kind of making this shit up as I go kind of vibe. Like, that's sort of been my whole vibe. And it's kind of fun to work that way. And yeah, I usually draw inspiration from more like, you know, design and dance and illustration and like
food
and yeah, just anything that's not movies basically. And I think it probably makes the projects more interesting.
I think that actually helped our careers early on, because neither of us were huge music video buffs. Like we liked the director's label stuff, and that stuff was really creative, but we really did not have an idea of the historical context that led to where music videos were when we were working on them. And so we were doing things because we didn't know better, and I think that really helped us a lot. Just this weird ignorance that allowed us to have a little bit more freedom than I think some people who were really kind of like music video worshippers, or people who felt like it was a very sacred, beautiful thing. Like, we were just doing things because we were excited about it, not thinking like, oh, is anyone actually going to want to watch this within the music video context? And I think that really helped us. Just being a little bit naive.
That's great. Yeah.
But
stay naive, y'all.
Stay naive. Exactly.
Don't watch any movies.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I want Sam's Pearls.
Yeah.
Sam's Pearls.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, yeah, take creative risks. Mm-hmm. I so much prefer the videos that I find on Vimeo that take creative risks and ultimately fail. I prefer those videos to the ones that play it safe and are hard to criticize, but ultimately totally forgettable. And there's a lot of work like that out there, and a lot of work that gets, frankly, programmed at, you know, big ticket film festivals that I feel plays it really safe.
Make Cloud Atlas, not John Wick. Take a swing.
Even though Shannon really doesn't like Cloud Atlas.
No, he said like they swing and they miss. That's really interesting.
No, it's good. That's a good pearl.
I mean, but I would say for all three of you, I mean, you guys clearly take lots of creative risks. And fortunately for the three of you, it usually pays off. And so I wouldn't say that there are that many swings and misses. No, if any at all, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I would just say, yeah, make yourself vulnerable. Make the characters in your films vulnerable. I mean, oftentimes, you know, I'll watch a short, and at no point are the actors being asked to say or do anything that to me indicates the least bit of vulnerability. And I feel like when you play it that safe, the potential for connecting with your audience is really stifled.
Yeah, I love that. Both good pearls. The vulnerability thing, I think, is like, mm-hmm. that's always like, it's weird. We rarely start with vulnerability. Like, most of our ideas start with like a stupid joke that we're like, okay, let's make that. Let's see if anyone's going to let us do that. But then the second half of our process is always like, okay, I'm going to spend a lot of time on this. Like, what does this mean to me? And I think that part of the process is always the hardest and the scariest, because I never know what the answer is going to be. Like, what part of me is going to be put into it, and what part of us is going to be put into our work. But it's always the most rewarding, and becomes this like kind of essential part of
art as therapy.
Yeah, art as therapy, for sure. I think it's a great. Great pearl.
I will also gladly admit that from my vantage point, it's really easy for me to say that from my curator's chair to tell everyone to go out there and make themselves vulnerable.
Be vulnerable right now. Tell us a secret.
Maybe on the next episode of the No Film School podcast.
Cool, guys. Can I ask for any more controversial hot takes before we leave?
trying to get those comments on the podcast. Yeah. Just comment. Does podcasts have comments? How do podcasts podcast?
They call in, just like the old radio shows. So.
Oh, I have one more hot take.
Yeah,
As you were talking about vulnerability, I was like, just don't make movies about aspiring artists that are so brilliant but no one gets it, who don't have a girlfriend. Just don't write that movie.
He's looking at me because I've made a lot of those.
No, we've almost accidentally made those movies. And that's like fake vulnerability. You know, like you read that screenplay all the time. And that's not vulnerability. Work a little harder.
And as an animator, I also feel like I say this a lot, and I've said this in the talk too. But as an animator, I think that there is such an opportunity to do anything you want. Like, you know, in that same way, like, don't write that same boring script. And like, you know, you don't have to make human characters, and they don't have to be in like a beautifully little crafted apartment made out of miniatures that you create. Like, I see that a lot, you know, and like some of those films are amazing, but it's like, just like build a world. Like, you can literally build any world in live action too.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like something to really take advantage of. Like, just get creative, whatever you can come up with. It's amazing. It's so exciting. Get creative.
1, 2, 3.
Get creative.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the No Film School podcast on whatever podcast platform you use. Go and rate us on iTunes or whatever that platform may be. And be sure to tune in to The First Feature on Wednesday and Indie Film Weekly on Thursday. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me at Jim_John_Jim on Twitter. And you can follow No Film School at No Film School.